These are the guinea pigs. Right when you hear them squeaking, here's the guinea pigs.
Pamela Madsen, her husband Kai, and their two kids live in a very small one-bedroom apartment in the Bronx. So small, Pamela laughs, that you can stride from the foyer through the den, past the aviary, across the living room, and into the dining area in half a dozen steps. Then you come to a door into what used to be a snug little breakfast nook.
Now, I'm a little embarrassed to open that door because you were here a little bit early. So you have to tell them that the bed is made.
Okay, the bed is made. And it's wedged into the space of a dinette set.
And my more romantic moments, I call it the pleasure cove.
The handy thing is you can reach from your bed to the stove to turn on
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. So I've never done that. But it brings a whole new meaning on breakfast in bed.
The Madsen's two boys, ages 10 and 6, sleep in bunk beds in the real bedroom, and this whole family, plus pet cat and bird, and 8 guinea pigs, plus bikes and books, home office, etc., are all jammed into such a small space because Kai and Pamela are infertile. The kids were both born by in vitro fertilization after a long and costly struggle against infertility that included numerous procedures. The Madsens quit laughing when they explained that their quest swallowed up $30,000 or more, leaving them deeply in debt. Doctor bills consumed all the money that might have gone to buying a house.
It set us back a lot. We ran up a lot of credit card debts. We paid for what we could and charged everything else.
It was expensive. It changed our lives in a way that felt like a betrayal. A betrayal because we were working people and had health insurance and had dreams like any other person.
Both Pamela and Kai had health insurance. She was a teacher and he had just switched careers. Neither health plan covered the artificial inseminations or the in vitro fertilizations they needed to get pregnant. It was a slightly different story for Fran and David Ritter in Queens. Fran's Wall Street accounting job had insurance that covered one in vitro attempt, but Fran needed 3 IVFs to get pregnant, plus other costly procedures to deal with David's low sperm count. The Ritters spent more than $20,000 altogether.
Thank goodness the stock market worked in our favor over the past few years. It's been tremendous. But that's not the kind of insurance policy that everybody has. You can't depend on a strong, robust economy to fund your IVF cycle.
Fran says insurance should have helped, and it would have if she had hurt a knee jogging or got emphysema from smoking, but not infertility.
Just because, you know, biologically we can't produce our own offspring, why should we be treated any differently? We desire to have a biological family. Why do I have to be treated differently?
The Ritters and the Madsens are part of the infertility support and advocacy group Resolve, which wants the government to require employer health plans to cover the condition. Some 2.5 million Americans seek some form of treatment for infertility each year. Most only require drug therapy or other relatively simple procedures. Only about 5% go on to the high-tech treatments like in vitro fertilization. Margaret Hollister of Resolve's national office in Boston says it's not clear how many infertility patients have to pay their medical bills out of pocket. She believes they are the majority, and she says that's not right.
We say it's an issue of fairness. If infertility is defined as a disease, it ought to be covered by insurance.
There is much debate as to whether infertility is a disease, a disability, or merely a social condition. Some commentators insist that because it is not a life-threatening or debilitating condition, it's not as important as many other ailments that go untreated.
That can only be said by somebody who's never talked to an infertile couple, who are probably among the most desperate individuals I've ever encountered.
Arthur Kaplan teaches medical ethics at the University of Pennsylvania.
The misery, the suffering that attends being unable to have a biological child when you want to do that is just enormous. And to argue that health plans are only going to pay for things that are truly diseases just flies in the face of what Americans want from their health care plans.
Some infertile Americans are asking the courts for fairness. Last year, the city of Chicago agreed to cover infertility treatments for city employees after a female police officer sued, claiming her infertility is a disability and should be covered by insurance. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled this summer that infertility is indeed a disability as defined by the Americans with Disabilities Act because it impairs a major life activity. David Ritter of Queens argues that even though he appears perfectly healthy, he is also disabled.
I can do mostly everything, run, jump, skip, but physically we are disabled. We're diseased in a way because we can't procreate naturally.
At least 13 states have passed laws mandating insurance coverage for infertility, but the levels of coverage vary. Employers and insurers oppose these mandates. They say the laws benefit a few while boosting the cost of health insurance for everyone else. Recent studies found that the average premium goes up about $3 a year when infertility is covered. A spokesman for the Health Insurance Association of America, Richard Kursch, says even $3 is too much.
Once you start adding these things up, what happens is that the mandates, no matter how well intended, raise the number of the uninsured. And that should be the key goal right now, to reduce the number of the uninsured.
The University of Pennsylvania's Arthur Kaplan says infertility should be covered, but with limits. Some unsolvable cases, he says, may be too expensive.
If you're looking at someone who's in their early 50s, who's still trying with the drugs and the in vitro fertilization, we know what the statistics are there, 1 in 1,000 odds. If you want to pursue that, I think it ought to be out of pocket.
Well, we're going to try rice with tomato sauce and then tropical fruit.
In suburban Scarsdale, New York, Stephanie and Michael Plout spoon baby food into a pair of little mouths at once. Their twins were born by IVF after what amounted to paper warfare with their insurance company. The Plouts began firing off letters challenging denied coverage almost as soon as they encountered infertility.
I think it was my first visit to my gynecologist. She wrote down the diagnosis code of infertility, and that was an immediate red flag to my insurance company. And they said they weren't going to pay for that visit, any subsequent visit, because they did not cover the treatment of infertility.
Through unrelenting appeals, the Plouts got some of their treatments covered, but still spent a lot of their own money.
I think the battle with the insurance company just made the entire situation so much worse, because I think you're struggling emotionally to accept the difficulty you're having in trying to have a baby, and now here's this monolithic company putting up another barrier saying, I'm sorry, but we're not going to help you in any way.
Still, the Plouts are the kind of couple most likely to succeed in an insurance battle and to afford the cost of treatment even if they lose. They're well-educated, politically savvy, and relatively affluent. Boston University Health Law Professor George Annis says the real issue is not whether or not to cover infertility for people like the Plouts.
No, there's no question. The real social justice question is here is how do we cover the 40 to 50 million completely uninsured people in the United States and the other 50 million underinsured people. It's a much more higher priority ethical social justice issue than how do we increase the private coverage people have to include infertility services.
Even if infertility activists succeed in passing state or federal insurance mandates, it might be only a partial victory. Legal experts say businesses that are self-insured may not have to comply, and that represents the majority of U.S. employers. This is Stephen Smith, Minnesota Public Radio.